The Coloniality of Gender and the Politics of Difference. Identity serve as a point of departure. The individuality and collectiveness of being shape the unique point of view represented by individuals. This allows for the production of diverse epistemology and hence a deeper representation of the world. The axis of power stemming from the history of colonial domination and currently arranging relation between state, people and beings is continuously trying to erase the variety of epistemological perspectives. At the same time, it works to uphold the colonial concept of difference, defined in terms of levels of development.
The approach of decolonial feminism, with its emancipatory goal, offers tools to move beyond the colonial difference and the oppression of the self. This essay asks, what intervention does decolonial feminism bring into our understanding of global affairs?
He will argue that, for multiple reasons, it deeply enriches and broadens the analysis of world interaction by offering tools for the liberation from distorted colonial thinking. Decolonial feminism provides insight into hegemonic power relations and global violence and reveals the post-colonial hierarchical distinction. Additionally, it considers the importance of geography as part of larger hegemonic history. Moreover, it critiques and corrects the inequality embedded in academia and sees knowledge production as a political act. Finally, it offers strategy to decolonize gender as a lived transformation of the social, de, and embrace the complexity of beings opposing the coloniality of gender. Althese Development proposant enriched understanding of global affairs where the ethical, the political and the epistemological are linked together. This, in effect, enable a departure from the universalization of the category of women. Postcolonialism versus decolonialism in order to assess the implication of applying decolonial feminism to global analysis, it is important to understand its complexity and goal, as well as situate it within the broader debate between postcolonialism and decolonialism. Both approaches stem from the understanding that despite the formal end of colonial rule and the emergence of postcolonial nation-state, the form of knowledge through which the world is described and comprehended are entrenched in Euro-American positivist claim perceiving knowledge production as a proclamation of universal truth. 3. Modernity appears as an important concept reaffirming Europe as the center of the world and rationalizing emancipation as inevitable and justifiable. 4. A Edward Said proclaim, the periphery is an idea in itself, and this idea's history, tradition of thought and imagery are necessary for the realization of the Western identity. 5. With these assumptions at its core, Maori intellectual Linda Tuiwai-Smith defined decolonization as a long-term process involving the bureaucratic, linguistic and psychological divesting of colonial power. 6. In this view, decolonial feminism strives to overcome the gender, class, race, sexuality oppression which is perceived to originate from the colonial legacy and continue to be entrenched in the capitalist world system of power. 7. Madina Tlostanova highlights the qualitative difference between decolonialism and postcolonialism. She sees the latter as too heavily relying on Western postmodernist concept, rarely rejecting the power matrix established in modernity. 8. Decolonialism, she claims, questions the universalizing nature of postcolonialism and instead of merely critiquing, it goes beyond and deconstructs. It constantly opens up to new local and epistemology and fundamentally reassess what knowledge production means. 9. However, both theories are conceptually radical, dedicated to the goal of epistemic decolonization and striving to dismantle the concept of modernity, he decided to rely on research representing both approaches in this essay. Hegemonic power relations and global violence. The key concept introduced by decolonial feminism is the coloniality of power or the colonial matrix of power. With the commencement of the colonial project in the 16th century, which brought with it the genocide of the indigenous people and the organization of the African slave trade, a new global order was established. The structure was based on establishing superiority through the concept of race and controlling productivity through the exploitation of labor and the introduction of capitalism. Thus, the coloniality of power manifests itself through the emergence of race, the control of labor, the domination of subjectivity, the introduction of gender, and the control of knowledge production. This, Maria Lugon additionally highlights the importance of the human, non-human distinction.
The colonization of the Americas and the Caribbean imposed a hierarchical distinction on the colonized subject in order to advance the interest of Western invaders.
The distinction included the difference between men and women. In the colonial narrative, only the civilized, advanced by modernity, are human. In contrast, identity of the colonized was deemed animalistic and thus, non-gendered, promiscuous, grotesquely sexual, and sinful. 11. The colonized subject became the mythical, others. The system in which the strong self-produce the rules of the game for the weak other is called a neoliberal imperium, by Anna Agatangelou and Heather Turcotte. 12. Revealing the layers of subjugation is an important epistemic development of decolonialism, decolonial feminism. It allows a broader understanding of global affairs by exposing and illuminating the ruling system of gender oppression. With such an understanding of the consequence of the colonial legacy, violence against women and other subjugated groups can be analyzed from a global perspective. This is exemplified by Amalia Saar, who skillfully adopts the concept of the colonial axis of power in order to analyze the effect of liberalism on members of marginalized groups. In her analysis of gender oppression, she incorporates the complex intersection of other persecuting mechanisms, including class, ethnicity and coloniality. 13. By analyzing the experience of Israeli-Palestinians, she argues that in order for marginalized subjects to benefit from the current liberal system, they need to adapt to its mode of behaving and thinking. The dominating masculine outlook such as certain attitudes, rational, value or behavior, even when seemingly gender neutral, have an implicit gendered character. Maleness and whiteness emerge as matters of historical consciousness, related to regime of power, not simply to sex or skin color. 14. Her research suggests that in order to understand the positionality of marginalized groups globally, it is important to analyze the extent to which they manage to adapt to the expectation of the colonial, hegemonic system of power. Another interesting example is given by Melanie Richter-Montpetit in her analysis of the violence enacted on the Abu Ghraib prisoners. Instead of seeing the event as a singular case of war violence resulting from the power imbalance, she instead argues that the abuse emerged as a result of a pre-constructed racialized, gendered and heterosexed world order, firmly rooted in colonial legacy and desires. 15. Richter-Montpetit's research serves as an example of the enriched analysis that can be achieved through the application of the concept of the coloniality of gender. Only with an understanding of the dominant larger social order are we able to challenge hegemony and liberate the subjugated from oppression.
However, decolonial feminism reminds us that the mere acknowledgement of the oppression is not sufficient to fundamentally reverse the system.
In fact, there remains a risk that international gender equality norm enforce the omnipresent system of coloniality. A Isako Motoyama Arg, The Framework of the Women, Peace and Security, WPS, Agenda, enshrined in the UN Security Council 1325 resolution, instead of bringing the voices of women into the realms of security, reflect the liberal order of power. Through the WPS, Liberal democracy are given an opportunity to exercise their privileged position within the global security system through the imposition of moral authority over the rest, with no benefit to the civil societies in need of delinking from the colonial past. 16. Decolonial feminism forces us to analyze global development projects with suspicion and sensitivity towards the larger axis of power relations. The cruciality of geography. The analysis of geography from a decolonial feminist perspective is essential for a deeper understanding of global affairs. This is for a variety of reasons. First, the discussed global system of power rely on mainstream construction of geography which localizes the site of violence and rationalizes those who are the victims and the perpetrators. The schools of international relations naturalize such imperial logic. In essence, decolonial feminism forces us to question the connection between violence and specific geographical location. The dominant discourse on violence links the oppression of women with the backwardness of places like Africa, Asia, Latin America, or Eastern Europe. In such a narrative, the US and Western Europe emerge as territories of right, where liberation is perceived to stem from the achievement of modern progress. 17. This narrative produces a category of women from the global south who are universally oppressed and submissive, and women from the global north who are universally liberated and independent. 18. This simplistic geopolitical segregation represents a set of imperial strategies crucial for the realization of the Western myth. 10. HAS a series of complications for marginalized individuals. For example, the analysis of the global asylum system reveals that the perception of certain localities as backwards deeply contribute to a stereotypical and cruel treatment of queer refugees migrating to the West. Their migration is used to justify the narrative of the West as ideologically and politically progressive, obscuring the continuing subjugation of queer individuals living within Western territories. 19. Therefore, understanding the colonial axis of power reveals the underlying universalizing assumptions pervading the narrative of different geographical locations. Decolonial feminism questions the unequal nature of a global system where rights are granted based on the regulation of national citizenship. Moreover, the division of geopolitics affects the way in which social phenomena in the South are addressed. The conceptual responses are shaped by colonial power relations. This is particularly strong in relation to Africa, which, Amaria Eriksson Baaz and Judith Verwegen-Arg, was constructed and located at the end of revolutionary progress and hence represents the least developed, other. 20. By using decolonial lenses, they show that the way in which the concept of securitization and militarization are applied to the continent reproduce the narrative of backwardness. 21. This point is further supported by Rita Abrahamsen, who in her well-proclaimed piece reveals the limitation of studying and analyzing Africa from a colonial perspective. She argues for the need to see Africa a place in the world and of the world. 22. This is an important epistemic and normative observation. The a priori understandings of certain geographical localities, shaped by the colonial legacy, affect our attitude and scholarly approach. Decolonial feminism urges to question universalist assumptions in order to truly experience and understand specific locations. Nevertheless, Reddy Kubak and Riley Marling point to the limitation surrounding the internalized progress narrative of decolonial feminism. They argue that a near absence of Central and Eastern Europea, CEE, in feminist theorizing is caused by a continuing organization around geographic locality understood in terms of progress and backwardness. The depiction of CEE cultural difference à mer, lag, bien Western Europe reproduce the narrative of Western superiority. 23. Kubak and Marling's analysis remind us of the emancipatory goal of decolonial feminism, where the difference is not only recognized, but also embraced and theorized, in order to learn from plurality of embedded knowledge. Hence, decolonial feminism help liberate epistemology from the limiting imperial barrier of geopolitics. Decolonization of knowledge and the production of decolonized knowledge. So far, this essay has discussed the workings of the global system of power and its implications for marginalized groups and localities. Another fundamental task of decolonial feminism is linked to its emancipatory nature and concerns the decolonization of scholarship and institutions of knowledge production, especially in the case of global feminism, s. in order to understand global affairs to a greater extent, decolonial feminism advocate for a. decolonizing existing epistemes and b. embracing subjugated ways of studying and knowing the world, especially indigenous knowledge and practices. Critical feminists like Peace Medi and Alice Kang argue that approach to studying women in the Global South adopted by Western feminists are permitted by colonial and neoliberal assumptions, reinforcing global inequality. The attribution of gender inequality to factors such as ethnicity or caste is challenged by decolonial feminists who strive for a more comprehensive analysis including historical and contemporary power relations. 24. Therefore, the goal of decolonizing the academy is a normative objective and is defined as identifying, critiquing and correcting the inequality embedded in scholarship and at the foundation of knowledge production. 25. Anne Sisson analyzed international relations from a decolonial feminist perspective and pointed to its fundamentally colonial nature. She argues that the founding assumptions of the discipline, such as sovereignty, liberal democracy and nation-state, stemming from the Westphalian project, obscure and legitimize imperialism and racism which, in significant cases, resulted in massacre and genocide. The coloniality of the discipline is linked to its constant erasure of people and perspective coming from the Global South. 26. What decolonial feminism reveals, then, are the costs of neglecting the colonial axis of power. They include a poorer understanding of global affairs, the imposition of an unequal global order and the continuous subjugation of marginalized groups. This point is further argued by Medi and Kang. They analyzed the representation of scholars in the Global South in gender and politics journals and confirmed Sisson's point on the erasure of South-based scholars, less than 5% of articles published between 2006 and 2017 in international feminist political journals were produced in southern institutions. 27. Revealing the inequality in knowledge production is a first step to challenging its pervasiveness. Through their decolonial practice, Medi and Kang made a point on the importance of diversifying the source of knowledge. A varied academy is more likely to ask a broader array of questions and come up with innovative methods in deepening our understanding of global development. Furthermore, decolonial feminism advocate for broadening our analysis of the international by shifting the geography of reason, meaning opening reason beyond Eurocentric modernist understandings of knowledge, a well a producing episteme beyond and outside of the strict frameworks of the academia. This includes paying attention to questions arising in spaces of struggle for liberation from domination, a well embracing what is often considered epistemologically irrelevant. 28. Such a decolonial approach stems from a particular understanding of the positionality of the researcher. Identity is deemed an inevitable point of departure, which shapes our research interest, observation and responses. 29. The acknowledgement of a standpoint is a fundamental development of decolonial feminism. It suggests that there is no such thing as a universal point of view. The hegemonic point of views are expression of a particular identity and are felt for the imposition of a particular global order. 30. Applying a decolonial lens to research could contribute to a process of knowledge production motivated by ethical goal of liberation. In this sense, knowledge production becomes a political act. The positionality of a researcher lies at the core of indigenous practices. Smith advances the argument of the importance of representing various epistemic approaches by arguing that benefiting larger communities, social transformation and a greater understanding of the world should lie at the core of knowledge production. 31. Yet, she argues, research seldom benefits indigenous communities as it never reaches the indigenous population. On the contrary, it often forces them to give up their culture and sacrifice their decision-making for the greater project of progress and modernity. 32. Decolonial feminism asks us to question knowledge production as entrenched within the global system of power. Only through embracing diverse locality and episteme can marginalized communities be benefited through research. The liberation of the self finally, the application of decolonial feminism suggests that real liberation does not only occur at the level of global politics or knowledge production, but also at the level of individual being, feeling and knowing. Despite the end of colonialism, the coloniality of gender continues to oppress individuals through the intersection of gender, class and race, a central aspect of the system of power. 33. The colonized inhabit a fractured world constructed through the imposition of difference and find themselves in conflict between their identity and their lived experience. Decolonization requires us to move beyond understanding individuals as oppressed, and to acknowledge the beauty of resistance as a way of the protection of the self. Decolonizing gender is a practical task which Lugan calls a lived transformation of the social. 34. The liberation of the individual is hence a necessary mission of decolonial feminism. International relations are played out on the globalized stage, but their effect fully emerge within the local context. Likewise, the abstract project of the coloniality of gender reveals the structure of oppression, but it is communities who suffer and lose their identity in order to survive under the existing regime. The emancipatory goal of decolonial feminism is achieved not only when the international arrangement of power is shifted, but fundamentally when the self is liberated. Seeing the personal as international, 35, shift our focus and allows us to fully grasp the interconnectedness between individual stories of resistance and altering global affairs. For Carolette Norwood, the process of liberation entails falling in love with a self he did not know, a self that was prohibited, a self that was shunned for no apparent reason, a self that was, and is, beautiful as is. 36. Conclusion: in this essay, he argued that decolonial feminism shifts and deepens our understanding of global affairs for a variety of reasons. Firstly, it works to reveal the coloniality of power based on the sex, race, class, sexuality division, which underline multiple international and local interactions through its enshrinement in the capitalist global system. Moreover, it asks us to question the seemingly natural link between locality and violence. Because of that, we are able to challenge the universalist cultural assumptions initially formed to uphold the inequality of geopolitics. Furthermore, decolonial feminism uncovers the underlying limiting assumptions of mainstream epistem and asks for the liberation of knowledge production through the rejection of coloniality. Simultaneously, it welcomes multiple ways of knowing and studying the world and evokes the need to embrace indigenous, local research. Finally, at the heart of decolonial feminism lies the task of the liberation of the self from the limitation imposed by the global power structure. Only then can its emancipatory goal be fulfilled. The analyzed argument suggests that decolonial feminism fundamentally broadens our understanding of global affairs. The decolonial approach is essentially an open-ended intellectual modality, continuously enriched by more local knowledge. A genuine interest in difference and a dedication to liberation make neocolonialism a critically important intellectual endeavor. However, it is necessary that decolonial feminism moves beyond criticism and analysis of the coloniality of power and shift towards the affirmation of something outside of the dominant system of value and norm. The fulfillment of its task of modifying both people's consciousness and power structure requires a constant modification of the applied tactics. The future of the discipline and its ethical, emancipatory goal remain fluid. Just as our understanding of international affairs is continuously broadened and enriched by learning from new localities, we also may need to learn to embrace the uncertainty of plurality.